This is episode 3 of The Other Ganges. I'm Renita Bangert, and I'm on a boat somewhere on the Strait of Georgia, chugging from the BC mainland towards the Gulf Islands. Honestly, it's more like a transit commute than a seafaring adventure. Like any of the Gulf Islands off the coast of BC, for most people, Salt Spring Island is inextricably tied to the ferries. Whether you're coming or going, you are bound inevitably to join the queue for the boats. The schedule of the island itself has grown around that of the ferries. It's funny how something that started off so logistical, so practical, has grown to occupy an almost philosophical position in culture here.
I guess our father was in the Merchant Marines,
yeah.
During the war, and he came to the Crofton, Duncan, well, the Crofton area mm-hmm. on the ship, and really liked the area. So then when he went back to England and married Mum, then they, after a while, they decided that they wanted to immigrate to Canada. At one point, it was either Canada or New Zealand, but in the end, Canada.
So in 57, we moved here.
But Dad came before.
Right.
He came 6 months before Mum. There were three of us, 1, 3, and 5 years old kids. And Dad said, when I've got a job, I'll
send
for you.
Right.
And so he initially started in Vancouver because he thought he had something over there to me.
Right.
I can't remember what it was. And that didn't work out for some reason. All these things I wish we had Dad and Mom to ask us now. Ask now. And so it was something to do. The ferries at that point in 57 were privately owned.
Yeah.
And it turned out that we were related, never figured that out either.
Distantly related.
Related to the owner, Captain Maud, of the ferries at that time. And so then.
He was known as Captain Maud because he owned the company.
M-A-U-D-E. And some of his relatives still live here. They'd probably, yeah. But, so he got a job, I guess starting as a deckhand. And then this is the part we were talking about, is we think that we came in on, it was either the Lady Rose or it was a ferry that came into Ganges Harbor.
Right into Ganges.
And it was June of 57.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, it was, right.
Because I just remember coming into Ganges Harbor, and maybe this is a bad memory, but, and Dad waiting, no, Dad would have been with us. I could just can't remember that part. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's very detailed.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And, so Mom was probably, to think of our mother now moving with these three little ones and moving to the island.
Fiona Wolf Milner and her sister Amanda remember several core aspects of their life growing up on Salt Spring vividly, and it all begins with the ferry system. My dad remembers commuting via ferry, and members of our family, like so many, have found employment within the system. It's a story that many people here have in common. All my travels to and from the island are bookended by the boats. Perhaps it cements my identity as an impermanent part of Salt Spring, a visitor. This peculiar sense of otherness runs deeper than one might initially expect, and reckoning with the other, capital O, is nothing new here. Fatefully enough, the idea for this project began on a ferry. My family and I were journeying back to the mainland from visiting relatives in Victoria on Vancouver Island. It was the summer before I moved to Montreal, and in the jumble of family histories and unformed plans for the future, there it was. I mentioned before that originally I wanted to focus my interviews on those who lived on Salt Spring between the 1960s and the 1980s. The time my father's family was there, and the period where the most mind-boggling and fascinating family stories had stemmed from. Putting this project in practice quickly reminded me that the road to the story you're looking for is paved with countless other interlocking and overlapping stories, many of which are crucial to understanding any story at all. Even now, I know that there is so much history and so many voices left untold and unheard. My journey with Salt Spring isn't ending with this year of travels and tales, it's barely even begun. We've now reached the beginning of my original idea. Stories of Salt Spring in the decades of massive social and cultural change that shifted North America after the World Wars. I heard some of the familiar tales of bands and hippies and draft dodgers that I expected, and, of course, I heard some things that I didn't expect. I visit Fiona and Amanda on my final trip to Salt Spring for this project, a trip I make with my best friend and faithful travel companion, Brian. You'll hear his voice here and there during our conversation. We spend our time on the ferry trips building Spotify playlists, watching TV, napping, the usual. On our trip over from the mainland, we're surprised by a relatively rare announcement from the captain, and we gaze out the windows in awe as a pod of orcas slips through the waves. It seems like a good omen.
So the first house we had was the one in Vesuvius, right? Is that the one where we lived for 2 weeks?
I think Vesuvius was first, yes.
Yeah, so it's right at the top. Of course, it's all a parking lot now, but there was a little house there. We lived there for a couple of weeks, and so we lived in a couple of different places.
And that house is now up at the agricultural at the Farmers
it's the
Institute
museum.
It's
oh, well,
the
they
museum.
Actually moved
they
the
moved
house.
It, yeah, because
wow.
They expanded that parking lot, the Vesuvius parking lot, and so they picked the house up and moved it. So yeah, now it's up at the it's the museum at the Farmers Institute.
Wow, yeah.
That was our house. But yeah, that
and
was
then
just
we.
And then we moved partway to Fulford. Was that the second one?
Yeah, so we moved around a few places, and then Mum and Dad bought that house on Rainbow and Atkins, which is no longer there. But and then Dad worked on the ferries, and Mum brought us up. She was a stay-at-home mum, and she gardened. I mean, she had this
huge garden.
I think it was probably an acre and a half we had, or more than that property. But she grew a lot of her own veggies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she was one of the first to start the farmer's market. That's here.
Oh wow!
Now, her and several friends. Because Mum loved to bake bread, but she also grew a lot of her own veggies.
She would sell bread at the market.
And she was also quite into recycling and doing all those things way before
anybody else. Yeah.
In.
Yeah, and we had the property. We did have chickens and we had goats.
Right.
We had goats, didn't we? So we were fairly self-sufficient. Not totally, of course, but
And we'd walk to school.
Yep. Yeah, school was nice.
But it wasn't very far away because it was at that point, it was just the elementary school.
That old school there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was
everybody
school.
Went there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we pretty well knew everybody in the school because there was so few of us. I don't know how many it would have been at that point.
Well, even just being on Salt Spring, you knew everybody.
Yeah,
you waved
to
everybody.
In the old days, everybody used to wave because
the old days.
You knew everybody. Yeah, everybody knew everybody, so you waved all the time. Nowadays, I mean, it's only when you're in your own neighborhood, really, that you wave to people, because otherwise you might not know them, you know.
Mm-hmm. So, and I'm sure with all the tourists now, too, it's like there's a lot of people that come off the boat. And
So, I guess, and then growing up and going through school, and then Dad quit the ferries for a while and worked on the...
Pandora, the one out of Pat Bay.
I can't remember what the marine.
Something to do with a weather? Was it to do with weather?
Yeah. And
but that was
exploration.
Was that after we'd all left home, or was it before?
No, it was because we remember when we go and see him in Victoria.
Oh, that's right.
So that was different because again, Mum had to adjust.
Mm-hmm.
She had to grow. She still, grew as much as she could, but she had to look after everything. And she did admit that it was not easy at the beginning, but she certainly, she was very involved with the church, etc., so she managed to keep going. We both graduated from here, all three, because our brother lives in Nanaimo.
Oh, yeah.
And so he we see him quite regularly, but he, we all finished school here. And then as you probably have heard, is everybody wants to leave the island once they've graduated. Yeah. I mean, that's all you live for, is leaving the rock. Grant you, a lot of us come back.
Yeah.
And then my daughter has just moved back. Well, she moved back a couple of years ago, but it's nice to see some of the young people moving back, because that's what we need, although it's very difficult.
But I have heard tales of like the old Fulford community store where like it was only canned items available and all this kind of stuff. So
Well, that's probably it.
That's something else.
Well, yeah, and for a little reminisce was, you probably heard of the trading company. With the ladders that they'd go back and forth to find your things.
Stuff on the shelves. You didn't help yourself to things. They climbed up on the ladder and got it off these really high shelves. Yeah.
And then
that was
beside
awesome,
it,
wasn't it,
was that in the trading company? Beside it, they had the butcher shop with the meat market with the
sawdust
on
the
floor.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you asked the butcher, oh, I'll have that, you know, which was behind the counter. You didn't pick up something that was already wrapped.
Yeah.
He said, oh, I'll have two of those, please, you know.
And we had a couple of butcher shops.
We did, Alex, as well,
Yeah.
So.
And so Ganges, of course, has changed a lot. But, I mean, because of our business, I had to accept change, because that's what we did. We did surveying and subdivisions and different things that was all part of. And you saw it happening, and can't very well stop change.
So, to jump around a little more, can I rewind a little bit?
Yeah.
I'm curious about sort of whatever memories you might have of when you were kind of newly arrived. Do you remember sort of what adjusting in was? Like you said, it was quite difficult for your mother to kind of adjust to what the culture was going to be like.
Yeah, so she's from another country, and none of her family, I mean, they had no support, no family support at all. She didn't know, we didn't know anyone, did we?
No.
We came here, and you know, we always say that's a huge step. I mean, lots of people do it, but we did get to know Mum's best friend was, they also
had emigrated
just around a little bit earlier. They were 2 years earlier, weren't they?
And
they became best friends. They were
five daughters,
and we're still friends with them. And you gradually adjust. But I think it was. I don't specifically remember. I mean, I was only 3 when we moved here.
Mm-hmm.
Fiona was 5. Remember too much, but
I remember one thing is we used to have winters. We always had snow
every year. Yeah,
we skated on the ponds, because people say, "Oh, we seem to get way more snow now." Well, when we were growing up, we used to get snow every winter.
We've got photos of us out there in our winter clothes every year, tobogganing and as you say, skating on.
Yeah,
yeah.
But that, I mean, weather is something that's changing everywhere. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But other things. Is just trying to think of the being at the elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
It was very different there, because the high school part was in upstairs, and the elementary
and we were
downstairs.
Yeah,
and then the full fair was in
the school grounds.
And
I think the population of Salt Spring wasn't it 800 or.
Was it that much?
800 or 1,000 or something when we first came?
Okay.
It would be interesting to look it up.
It
was pretty small.
Around that time, it was definitely under 2,000.
Yeah,
it was pretty small.
Because you're looking at the archives.
Okay.
Yeah.
Exactly. And
okay.
I know there's a little bit of a divide in that time between, it was kind of split into people who came who were laborers and then people who did more of like the living off the land kind of thing as well. So there was a little bit of a divide happening, and it divided along the island as well. So there's little baby communities kind of, but a lot of people kind of were, you know, doing their own, whether it was trying to fish off the land here and like, you know, farm their own food, or whether it was more people here who were coming as longshoremen or that kind
of
thing.
Right,
and then
course.
The logging industry was
yes.
sort of
and
picking up around.
Yeah,
then.
It was
yeah.
quite busy then. Yeah, we were
logging.
Quite used to seeing logging trucks, and there was a log tip in Ganges, just below the fishery there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
I
it was one in Fulford
that.
As well, wasn't it? It seems to me. And yeah, it was common to see logging trucks all the time.
Yeah, so it was really industrial around here.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a lot of fishing, you know, there was You remember Jeff Holland?
Yeah. There was a lot of, we could go down people and buy fish off fish the dock.
Yeah. On the boat. So, yeah, a lot of that kind of industry for sure. Fishing and logging and farming. Lots of people had big farms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Big farms.
Big farms.
Where I live now. We're lucky too. I mean, with the climate here, we can grow a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, we can grow from starting from April right through till, I mean,
Mama has a great
eat out of our garden all year.
Yeah, she's
round.
Got a huge garden.
Because you can, you know, it's mild enough that you can at least up in the ground over the winter. Even if it snows, it just covers it over. You wait till you can dig it out. But we used to do that. You know, Mom and Dad used to do that. And I think a lot more people did in those days, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
They were out looking out for themselves, you know.
Yeah.
It was kind of a way of life.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping more people get back to that because it's good to be able to raise your own food.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard a lot about the homesteading sort of era. I mean, there were a lot of cultural changes, I think, from what I hear going on sort of in the decades following, like from the 60s, 70s, 80s. I feel like Salt Spring saw a lot of really interesting cultural shifts happening. I know my family got into the hippie thing.
Oh, yeah.
In a big way. That's actually, this project has been really interesting because my memories of what I hear from Salt Spring from my family are a little skewed because there's a lot of talk of like the transcendental meditation.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
All that kind
that
of
was
stuff.
A big thing, yeah.
Which was a huge thing. And, like, you know, my dad playing gigs at Fulford Hall.
I was going to say, because he was a musician.
He was,
yes.
He played with the Rollins.
And Alf was.
Yeah.
And Alf was who I went to school with.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we used to have those gigs, and as you say, and the coffee houses. Remember? I just remembered that.
That's true.
The coffee houses were great. I mean, it was music.
Yeah.
And you go and have coffee and listen to different kinds of music. And that was
that's right.
Was that when we came back? Or was that when?
I think it was when we were, after we were teenagers. Wasn't it?
Yeah. That was a great place to hang out.
Yeah.
So is that sort of a thing? Like, was that, there were multiple sort of places like that around? Or is that kind of, there was one?
It was mostly one place. You know, it was good because it was something that didn't involve alcohol for, you know, for young people to be able to go to and still get out and enjoy the music without having to be involved in alcohol, you know.
So they were, it's like maybe in the bottom of St. George's Church?
Yeah, I think that might have been
which
it.
Is now All Saints. Which
or
is
United Church?
Yeah, it was one of the places in Ganges. The other place to hang out was Rita's.
Right. What's now the Salt Spring Inn.
No, but
it was the fish and chip shop.
Because when I was going out with a fellow in grade 11 and 12, and that's where we go and hang out.
Right, of course.
So where is it? It's
not there.
No, it's not there.
It was called the Reef.
Yeah, the Reef.
And it was on Hereford. Is that Hereford? No, Jackson.
Jackson. So it's across, there's the auto parts store.
Yeah.
And then there's the school. So in between there, right, pretty well the next lot over was the Reef. And we used to go there, and Rita Dodds, who's still alive, but
she's in her 80s.
Yeah, late 80s.
Yeah, she ran it. She
was wonderful with the young
people. Yeah.
And she just let anybody come in, and whether you ate very much or not, but it was just a place to be. And you, of course, had those music boxes that we could play music.
Jukeboxes. Yeah.
And because I remember my boyfriend at that time had a souped-up car, as they say. I used to go there and then drive around.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you about that.
She was really good.
Yeah. But it was nice to have somewhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
And the pool hall. That was the other one.
Oh, right.
Which is now Core Inn.
Okay.
The pool hall. And there was a movie house. Yeah, we're really.
Yeah.
Remember there was a movie theater.
Yeah.
Like you said it. So when you stood on the road.
The Rex.
The Roxy or? The Rex.
Rex.
Yeah. And they. I remember we went to see Bambi there, but
that was on the left.
And then after that was when the pool hall came into being. So that was probably in the, I graduated in '70s, so it was in the '60s.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a great place to go again because we had to have places to hang out, play pool, and just, and they had fish, they had food, hamburgers and stuff.
Right.
A real, what do they call it? like a fast food restaurant,
like a diner.
Yeah.
I'm getting like Archie vibes.
Yeah, that would have been about probably the era of it for sure.
Yeah, that was just thinking of that.
Yeah.
What else would? And of course, we had the library, nothing like the one we have now.
It's important to have somewhere like where you can kind of have your own community when you're a young person like that. Because from what I hear, there was quite a divide between generations as well. And so if you were to get into the bars, of which there weren't many, that was like a very different experience from when you want to have somewhere to socialize that's not like predicated on, I don't know what, being part of the laboring community or being, you know, one of the other kind of social groups that was happening at that time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's cool. Was the library sort of also a social place? Not really, right?
I don't think so. Not like it is now.
It was one of those shh, you know.
Yes.
You must be quiet. You're in a library. That would be the era.
It was a boring.
The old
nothing
one.
Like
now. Nowadays it's different.
It's great. Yeah, the one we have now is wonderful for a lot of people to be able to. But yeah, that was, I guess, part of it was the room.
So what are the young people of the island to do, left to their own devices with limited resources? For Sue Newman and her community, this open space left room to get truly creative. Sue, a longtime bandmate of my father's and friend of the family, meets me in the unexpectedly crowded restaurant and bar at the historic Salt Spring Inn. We huddle together in the corner of a booth.
It's noisy in the bar. You'll have to lean across the table to hear Sue.
Well, I love hearing about, I mean, because obviously I have a bias because of my dad, but I love hearing about the arts scene and the music scene and the theater scene here during those times because, you know, and then as I started doing more research and talking to more people here from, you know, many decades of the island, one of the things that comes up a lot in the earlier decades is that there wasn't a lot to do to keep young people engaged sort of before the art scene started blossoming here.
Yes.
Like there was, you know, there was a weird in-between period in the 60s where it feels like a lot of the youth, I mean, you're sort of a young adult. There were not really many.
They were kind of floating. There were sort of, there weren't as many options.
There was like the pub if you were an adult and then, you know, or the community centers and family things if you were a child, but like the in-between, you know, and so I think, and I mean, I think
there's always been sports. I mean, I think there were, you know, but there wasn't.
Yeah, I think my dad really benefited from having the art scene here that there was, and that's honestly most of what I remember being told growing up about Salt Spring has to do with the arts scene here and that kind of part of the culture and like the lengths people would go to with like very low production value to like try and get a play on the road. When I was talking with them, Dave and Kate, Roland and my dad, they were talking about like at the way they would do costume design for some of the plays, like with the cardboard apparatuses and like all that kind of stuff.
Ingenuity, you know, they would use their ingenuity to find.
But like you said, it's in the newspaper. So previous to A Christmas Carol, what kind of stuff were you working on as a part of?
Well, we didn't actually. Oh, that's not true. I guess like there was a group called the Salt Spring Players, which has eventually kind of, I think it maybe kind of went dormant, and then it kind of resurfaced as Salt Spring Community Theater, which is still running. And so so we would kind of sometimes put on double headers. You know, the Salt Spring Players would put on a play, and we'd do Salt Spring Madness, the history show, or we would do Christmas with Scrooge, which actually is what Christmas Madness became, because I can't remember when we put to rest the name Madness, but eventually it just sort of felt like it was not, I think it was morphing, you know, a lot of people had come and gone, and I think they sort of felt, my parents maybe felt that Madness wasn't speaking to the same people anymore, so they decided to just become Newman Family Productions, which is what it remains today. And I'm the only Newman left here to do that, but except for all the kind of, you know, wonderful extended family of people that I work with. So, Yeah, so we would work together with the community players sometimes, but not always. And but, I mean, we'd borrow sets, or they'd help with this, and we'd help with that. But it kind of, you know, we were living harmoniously with them, trying to create sort of seasons and keep theater happening here. And we did other things called the Small Hall Ball, which was up at Central, and it was kind of melodramas or little variety shows in the style of kind of vaudeville stuff, I guess, you know, largely because that's what my parents grew up with, really, and there just seemed to be a niche for that, because you could put together a show with different people that had a specialty thing that they did, you know, so sure, why not, you know, and then it would finish with a dance, because mom and dad would play, together, and they would, people could dance at the end of it, or we would bring in my eldest brother, and he would do some stuff with more contemporary music, So there were all just all sorts of different things. Yeah. Oh gosh. It really was an amazingly rich time in terms of just the projects that were going on. And all the while, you know, they were also becoming a lot more politically aware and really involved with the NDP. They were very, you know, really wanted to see. Well, this was pre-Green years, of course, but. They were really inspired to see how people took care of each other up here, you know, with all the social programming that, you know, medical for one thing, a huge thing the states didn't have still, so that has a weird connotation of that down there, but anyway. So they were really wanting to get involved with just how Canada worked and how Salt Spring worked, and to be part of that. It was really, really important to them, and part of that was by creating theater for theater's sake, but also theater around political activities too. They made it blendable, and it was really. So there was always a project going on. It was incredible.
It sounds like there were a lot of people trying to kind of connect politically via their art.
Yeah,
engaged
and concerned, definitely.
Trying to find ways to communicate that.
Definitely.
It's really, really important.
It really is. And actually, so the show that followed that, which was something called Madness Strikes Back, you were saying, or Madness Returns. And you know what? There were a couple different ones. I can't remember all of them, but Madness Strikes Back was the story of Salt Spring seceding from the rest of Canada, because there was a whole bunch of, it was right around the time that there was a lot of talk of secession with Quebec, you know. And so they took that idea and, you know, projected what that might look like here, and it was kind of wacky and wonderful So you've probably heard of the Raging Grannies,
yes.
So which is a group that still is around here on Salt Spring and in a number of locations, kind of all over Canada now, I think, but it started on the West Coast of the East, or they started on Gabriola. But we had a little kind of glimpse of the Raging Grannies before they were the Raging Grannies in this show, because. The idea that Salt Spring wanted to secede, we had a wonderful filmmaker at the time. His name was Ken Simons. He was the son of some other activists that my parents were involved with, and he did these little films at each of the ferry terminals. And so we got permission and we staged these little strikes that when the ferry came in, all these people dressed up in little old ladies with umbrellas and hats, trying to, fight off the feds who were trying to come to Salt Spring to say, you can't secede. But we were fighting them off with slugs at the end of factories. They were real slugs. We weren't torturing slugs. We dyed marshmallows green to make them look like the big banana slugs. Anyway, just these ridiculous scenes and pies in the face. Oh, pies in the face, of course, you know. I mean, just all this stuff is old, you know, silent movie stuff and vaudeville stuff. So, and it was just, we just had a blast with it. It was so much fun. Anyway, so that show was a big success because, of course, we did secede and we, Anyway, yeah, pies in the face. So, okay, so then that kind of takes us into the next generation of, with my eldest brother. So he was making music too. So one of the bands that he started was this band called Bogwater, and Dear Golden was in that, and a singer by the name of Wendy Sinclair. And who sadly died in a fire. So I was just kind of moving back to the island. I had been in school in the mainland and pursuing my, yeah, so we left for a period of time and then we came back.
Okay.
That was about 2 or 3 years that we were gone in mid-60s. Came back and I graduated up in Vancouver, in Port Coquitlam. Came back because I decided I actually didn't want to become a ballerina, which was what I was really beginning to focus more of my time with, musical theater, all kinds of different things, but started really focusing on that, and then I decided, no, that's going to just not be the life I want. So I came back to Salt Spring, and within a couple of months, I was singing with my brother's band, and my first husband had just been starting to play with them as well, or maybe he was there for a little bit longer. Yeah. Anyway, so that's where I met my first husband. And Arno Wood, of course, was playing the drums. They used to do these crazy things. They rented Beaver Point Hall, which was and is a beautiful old heritage hall. And boy, the hippies took over down there for lots and lots of really fun dances. And they had this idea to do a monthly dance, and it would be a birthday dance. And so, you know, anybody has a birthday in September, this is your birthday party. So they were birthday party dances, and they made ice cream, and obviously lots of beer and wine probably too and stuff. But anyway, just everybody came out to these things because there again, there wasn't really an awful lot for that kind of age demographic. There was some, and there was, you know, people played in the bars and stuff. But anyway, these boogies, they were called Beaver Point boogies. They were really really just big wild parties. And they happened on a monthly basis, and so we had this regular gig playing there, and people it was something that people went to every month.
I found earlier, I found an ad for one of those Beaver Point movies for, yeah. It was a birthday party for all Geminis.
All Geminis, yeah. Actually, that's right. He didn't do it by month. He said, yes, it was just astrological signs. Yeah,
I love
right.
that. For good reason.
That's right. And of course, Dave would do all these wonderful posters for it.
John Grain, who we heard from earlier, echoes some of the memories we've heard from others so far, namely the comparative remoteness of the island in the earlier decades and how that changed the lives of Salt Springs residents. I'm particularly interested in his memories of how quickly things began to change when the ferries arrived on the island. As we already know, this is a significant thread in our stories. And it's particularly significant as we're thinking about immigrants to the island and the ever-present tides of change.
Came to Salt Spring. Her family made 500 people on the island. When I came, well, she came in 1957. I came in 1962, I believe, 63, early 64. There was maybe 2,500 people on the island, and that was largely due to the fact that suddenly there was this transportation system. When the Blackball Ferries got taken over by the BC Ferries Corporation, they also bought any of the private ferries that were the only transportation routes available to Salt Spring Islanders and other islanders as well, other up and down the coast. Mm-hmm. And so when the Union Steamship Company disappeared and the Blackball Ferries disappeared and the private ferries disappeared, suddenly this large corporation, BC Ferries Corporation, had taken over all the transportation, and they improved the docks, their schedules were better, they were regular, they provided employment for the islanders. It was really quite a change for the island.
So at that point, do you remember, were the ferries, when they were taken over initially by BC Ferries, was that already a point of contention, or did it kind of grow to become more, because it's quite a source of conflict where, you know, some people think the ferries are changing the character of Salt Spring, or, you know, causing all these problems with the infrastructure of the island not being able to support the amount of people that are coming onto it, et cetera, et cetera. Was that a concern from day one?
I'm sure there were those who felt that any sort of a change is not good change. Mm-hmm. I think the initial population of people who were on the island before BC Ferries started were very conservative in their perspective. They probably did not welcome what the ferries meant, which meant an increase in population. Mm-hmm. But then not only the increase in population because of the ferries, but things like communication systems improved. You know, television, telephones. You know, those were things that you can't underestimate the power of those, because it brought the news of Salt Spring, not only the news to Salt Spring, but it brought the news of Salt Spring to other areas. And suddenly people found that if they lived in Victoria or Nanaimo or Vancouver, they could be on Salt Spring Island in 2 hours if they timed it right. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, along with that, of course, came, you know, land development and as I say, communication and transportation systems. And so I think, you know, the few very strongly opinionated anti-ferry people in those days quickly became a minority, because the population increased quite significantly in the 60s on the island. And then, of course, with the cultural upheaval that was going on at that time, Salt Spring Island suddenly offered this haven of security and a place where people could go and be safe. They could be with people of like-minded people. It was quite a draw for many people that were wanting to leave the society that the culture was leave the society in which the culture that they were living, they wanted to escape from, if you'd understand what I mean.
Thank you.
as I hear more stories of Salt Spring, I hear several repeating symbols that are tied to the perceived character of the island. I think my favorite symbol for change thus far is the ferry. Sadly, the sewer is just not as romantic. It's a symbol of escape and freedom for some, a sign of unwelcome invasion of space for others. I think the commentary here is pretty clear. It's a good metaphor for a lot of the themes I'm seeing emerge as I travel back and forth. Environmental shift, industrialization, the changing face of immigration, and arrival and leaving and coming back again. I have more philosophical questions to ask and more thoughts of my own to share. On the next episode of The Other Ganges, self-sufficiency, self-discovery, and one hell of a cultural revolution.